Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. So if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hi, my name is Andy. I work for Nitro Snowboards since 18 years now. I'm currently based in Germany. I've been there pretty much my whole life, but I've been traveling and like worked at different places before. And yeah, I'm doing this since 18 years and I love it.
Awesome. So can you just tell me more about like what your role is and like what the company does?
Yeah. We are like a collective of, let's say, 20 people working on Nitro Snowboards. It's like one of the more established snowboarding brands globally. We do have like an old system of like working with countries, you know, with individual distributions. If I consider them as well, which I do as employees, we would be maybe around 300 people selling snowboards globally. And the setup has always been pretty interesting, I think. We never had a headquarter or anything. We just like had... Like we left the competence pretty much in the country wherever it's like where we feel the most comfortable with. So like originally Nitro was founded in the US in Seattle. And so from day one on, all the designs have been coming out of Seattle and then now from Salt Lake City. So always based in the US. The boot design has always been done in Italy because we have a boot development team over there. The logistics are from Italy. The design, like engineering part, like the bindings and the boards are done in Germany. So we're pretty spread out and never had a headquarters. So we work with like remote people since day one. We have like four offices and there's not more than like maximum four people in one office.
So I guess like, can you just talk more about like, what is your role specifically?
My role within Nitro, so it started, I started off in marketing and I took care of the European side of marketing for Nitro. And after a while, my responsibility got shifted to global marketing. So I've been doing this for, I think, 15 years or 14 years. I did the global marketing. And the last 4 years, I moved into the position of COO, which I'm pretty much overlook, not only like building the countries, you know, like working with new distributions around the world, or also just the internal structure to whatever, improve wherever we can improve and still overlook the marketing. So it's like, it progressed into something, but it's like this little family business, you know, we're like just a few people. So pretty much like you're involved in every process pretty much, you know. So after 18 years, you know, the company inside out and I contribute wherever I feel I can contribute the most.
For sure. So I guess in terms of the process, right? So you said it's like 300 individual sellers as an example. So are these people selling in different retail stores or are they selling on direct to consumer channels? Like what did, you know, because I was just checking out like your website and you can't, for example, like buy and check out like on your website. So I'm assuming they're selling somewhere, right?
Exactly. So like the model that we follow is like, you know, we haven't changed since 35 years now. So originally, like we wouldn't be out there if the retail, like the dealers wouldn't have supported us from day one. So we always said, okay, this is our main goal. We want to be the best partner to our retail stores. We as the brand, we, you know, produce or design products. And then we have our partners in each country. So every country, there's a company who distributes Nitro in the country. I consider them as part of the family, but it's individual companies. And they work with retail. So let's say a country like the US maybe has like 300 retailers. A country like Germany, 200 retailers. And we do not sell directly online because we don't want to bypass them. Even if that's the trend that's happening globally, but I feel we would destroy a little bit the culture that has been built over the years in snowboarding if we leave all the middlemen out. That's what's happening all over and around, but we still believe we can make it happen, make good product and be a good partner for retail. And I mean, time has proven that we can do that. You know, we're still growing. The company's in a pretty healthy position, even if we do exactly the opposite what everybody else is doing.
Right. So essentially like you're not doing that because you don't want to compete with your customers, because your customers, they have their channels, they have their clients, they're selling direct to consumer and they're doing very well, but you want to focus on just building out the products. And then these distributors or the end, I guess, sellers, you just make sure that they're, you know, representing your brand in the best way possible.
Exactly. I think that's, you know, the main point is when you look at the big picture, I always think if I would follow an example, whatever Nike is doing, Adidas, or any bigger brand, they, of course, they realized, okay, we have way more margin if we go direct. You know, the communication channels have changed. So suddenly as a brand, you have Instagram, you have whatever, TikTok, you reach end consumers directly. So why not just market direct to them directly instead of like cutting back your margin and working with all those middlemen? But we believe that everybody contributes value, you know, to a certain point. So like the distribution, they make all the customer service in each country. So whatever, wherever you buy an Nike product, you're going to have a person in your language responding to you on a daily basis if there's a problem. And on the other hand, like they are the ones going out to all the retail stores. They do all the clinics. They explain our product. You know, it's not a charger cable, you know, that's easy to buy on Amazon. You don't need much explanation to it. It's like a pretty high emotional product that also costs some money, you know, $700-$800 for a snowboard. So we believe that this is the right distribution channel for products like a snowboard. Of course, I could sell them online, but if I think in the long run, you know, if I do that 10 years from now, only sell online, I'm going to destroy retail channels. And at some point, like it's hardly any point of contact, just online. So I feel like we're losing that base, you know, that culture that has been built, because every retailer, they have their own like local network of riders that they support. We help them support their shop team. So you start, you know, spreading the joy of snowboarding throughout, I don't know, 4,000 retailers globally. And I think a lot of brands underestimate the effect if you just skip them and go direct.
Right, for sure. No, it's like a very interesting strategy, because to your point, all these big companies like Nike, and they've gone direct. But yeah, I mean, you guys are still, but as you said, right, I mean, you're not really competing with them because your products are so different. So what would you say is the biggest challenge that you face in the business today?
The biggest challenge is kind of shift what's happening right now in retail. So because everybody or all the brands are going direct, we saw that retail has been suffering. So we say, like, you probably make the same turnover that you've done, let's say, with 200 stores in a country, now with 100 stores. But those retailers are bigger ones, like main sport chains, that are probably not so focused on specifically snowboarding. So you're like in a store that doesn't really sell the emotion anymore, and even the staff is not as educated in snowboarding. So what they do, they segment our line and just pick, let's say, the easy models sometimes. You know, don't want to, like, talk for everybody, but like that's, I see this trend. So let's say 70% of the line is not really represented in retail anymore. And that even would force us more to go direct, to showcase the line. So our challenge is like, how do we educate dealers to trust us that we are a partner they can grow with, you know? And that has been because the system has been changing, and it's only, I think, globally two snowboard brands who are not selling direct to consumer. So we are on the other side where like, we want to make sure that we still stay relevant with all the products that we do.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that that's interesting. But you guys are, I guess, just to be clear, right, that there's no plans in the immediate future to go direct to consumer. You guys are set on that it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's the plan. You know, we have to always react to what the market is doing. We cannot just, whatever. We try to follow our own rules and like, we believe in it as well. But of course, if the whole market changes and we are under pressure, and like, let's say dealers will only buy 2 out of 48 models that we do, we're going to be forced to protect ourselves, just go direct. But as long, and we have been growing the last couple of years while this trend was going on. So I believe we are still on the right path, but I could not give a security what happens in like, you know, 5 years. But sure. I know that we've been following that for 35 years. So I feel pretty confident on that path.
But do you think, I mean, there could be a challenge, right, in the sense of like the snowboards are big, people want to look at them and they want to feel it. It's a different type of product, of course. Like you have other products like apparel, which is like a little bit easier to sell online. But with the snowboard, yeah. I mean, that's probably, it's like buying a car sort of, not that you can't do it, but it's a bit more challenging.
Yeah. And also, like, I think people forget about how expensive it is to sell direct to consumer. I mean, all those people in the chain who are contributing value, what I just explained, you have to have them internal. So you have to get customer service people. Like the return quote, maybe on outerwear, on technical outerwear in our industry is like more than 50%. So what are you going to do with all the jackets that come back that they, whatever, they order 4 jackets and maybe buy one. So 3 are coming back, right. And then maybe use them already one time for one evening to try them out on the outside. You know, what are you going to do with that? So sometimes I feel like it seemed too easy. Like, oh, it's just a margin, looks way better in an Excel sheet. But if you actually really compare it, there's a reason why we have all those people in this value chain. And if you skip them, somebody else needs to do that work if you want to maintain the same level of quality, you know. So that's why I feel it's not always automatically you make more money by selling direct. So we appreciate everybody who helps us as a small brand to continue to be out there and be relevant.
For sure. So do you guys get like a lot of customer service inquiries now just from people asking about the products?
Of course, a lot, like every day, I don't know, 300, 400, 500.
Oh, wow.
Like, different stuff, but mostly like also people don't know exactly what board they should ride. They give it the weight, their body size, like, oh, should I buy this board, or what kind of binding do I need with this board? There's many, like, of course, questions coming every single day.
Essentially that you're just guiding them and saying, hey, listen, like if you want to buy it, then you go to this like local store, essentially, right?
Yeah, exactly. We send them to the stores. We also like on Black Friday, like, we did it the last couple of years. We just go completely offline with the website. Just put a banner and like, you know, don't waste your time. Like, just go out and enjoy nature. That's the whole point is like for us, the reason why we sell snowboards or why we love what we do is like, we hopefully have a good chance, first of all, to sensibilize people how beautiful nature is. It's so, snowboarding is such a fun sport. You usually do it with friends. And I rather have kids go snowboarding if they can afford it. That's a threat, of course. It's getting more and more expensive than having them buy a PlayStation and just sit in front of TV. And you know, so it's like, there's a whole point. Like, we want to motivate people to go out and go snowboarding. And I feel the retail store, at least used to be this community hub in the past, where like you meet others, you know, like-minded people, and you can maybe they educate you about product and then they show you which resort is best to go. So that's how it used to work in the past. And I think that's a good way.
For sure. So you mentioned that you guys are, you know, still growing year over year. So obviously 2024 is around the corner. So what are your goals for next year? I mean, I don't know if you can mention revenue or just like what you guys are trying to get to.
I mean, one thing that when you say we're growing year to year, I mean, it hasn't always been like this. And the beauty that I really appreciate the most is we do not have any pressure to grow. I know so many brands in our industry that are now, there's investors involved, there's like some equity holdings, whatever. They need to grow no matter what. If it's snowing or not snowing, if the market, if there's a war, if whatever is happening, they need to grow because investors want their money back. We do not have any investors. So that's the beauty of it all. It's fine if we lose 20%. It's fine. It's like this up and down. So if we have good years, we're going to like put money aside. We save it. Every dollar that gets spent on Nitro Snowboard stays within snowboarding. So, you know, we spend it over trips with a team riders. We have the biggest team. It's like, I think 140 people globally that we support. It's more than any other brand. It's like 7 times more than we have employees. And so that's a good thing. You know, we have no pressure to grow and the money stays within snowboarding. It isn't always the case for most other brands. And if you ask me about the goals, I mean, I'm excited. Of course, I want to grow the brand. I think we can still grow a lot if we want to, but we like to do it step by step. Like, we don't put ourselves like huge, crazy goals for like increasing sales. I think the nature of it is like you build a market, you build a brand, and you never take big steps. You take small steps. And if you do the right steps every year, you see, you know, the growth that you have. But then we are also affected by external factors that we can't influence. Currency exchange rates, pandemic, wars, stuff that we can't really influence. And so it's really hard to plan and say, we're going to grow 20% next year. You know, we can say that, but what do we know? I think we have the tools to continue to grow and we follow those and then we see what happens.
For sure. But I guess like, if you're going to grow 20%, right, like what would you say is the biggest obstacle preventing you from like where you're at now to growing 20% by next year?
I would say the biggest obstacle would probably be external factors, realistically. Like if China would invade Taiwan, that would be a big problem for us,
right,
as we produce our boards, for example. You know, right. If the trade war is ongoing slightly with the US and China, that is a problem because both are like our biggest two markets are US and China. So it's like, I think in the last couple of years, the external factors have been more like the factors that were hard for us to calculate. And they had a bigger influence on the business than what we could influence. So I think if everything is fine, the world comes back to peace, you know, we believe in globalization and everything is fine, then I don't see any reason why we wouldn't grow 20%.
Right, for sure. No, yeah. I mean, it seems like you have this trajectory, unless there's some kind of, you know, chaotic or crazy global conflicts that you can't control, you'll keep continuing to grow.
Yeah. I think another threat probably that's like, I'm not sure if it's a threat, but for me, it's a threat personally, because I don't like this, that the sport becomes more and more expensive and that limits it for many people. If you think that maybe, I said roughly 80% of the people snowboarding live in cities. So you have the extra expense of like, nobody goes for a day. You know, if you live in a city, you usually have like 2 or 3 hours to drive to the mountains. So you're going to stay overnight. So the snowboard itself is not the most expensive. I mean, in the US, if you go to a resort, you pay $200 a day ticket. If you just add it all up, if you put the petrol, the accommodation, the lift tickets, food, it's going to be whatever, $2,000 for like a weekend with your partner. You know, it's easily, it's super expensive. So that limits the amount of people who can actually go snowboarding. There's, of course, the risk that the winters get warmer and warmer, snow is melting, it's not worth it and not more like lucrative for smaller resorts to produce snow. That's another threat, but I just see it becoming more and more elite and expensive. And that is, I don't like so much because I would like to be super inclusive and just get everybody to try it out. But there is a limitation, the entry barrier due to the amount that you have to spend.
Right. So obviously now in 2023, 2024, everybody's looking at the best use cases for AI. So what would you say is like the role of AI in your business? Like, do you guys use it at all? Or if not, like, where could AI come in and help you out?
I mean, I watched a documentary yesterday about it and how the industry is using it, not our industry in general. For us at this point, the only thing we're probably going to use it pretty soon is like to create product texts, to do any kind of copy for websites, stuff like this. We played around with it, which was super interesting to see. Let's say we have a board graphic or a board in the line for 10 years. So you feed the system with like the last 10 years of graphic and it comes up with the 11, how AI would do it. But it was honestly just more playing around, like just fun. It's not at the point where we can actually really use it. If we would be selling direct, that would be a different topic. You know, right. Then there's different ways how we can utilize it. But for us right now, where we basically create the product, design it, I think it's limited at this point how we can use it. Yeah.
But do you think the AI? Yeah. Well, I was just curious, right? Because you mentioned you guys get like 500 messages per day too. So do you think AI could help you in a more conversational way where people could be getting like their own questions answered by an AI bot as opposed to a human?
I mean, yes, of course. Do I have the skill set to figure this out? No, not right now. I still believe. I don't know. I know how you feel about it, but if I go, I see it in any service I'm using, if it's like an internet provider, if it's like a rental car company, if it's a travel company, doesn't matter. It's all already with chatbots and whatever. And it's so annoying because they're not good enough to actually solve the problem. As I feel we are a small company, we sell like highly emotional products. As long as I can do, I will try to have a direct one-to-one conversation with somebody. I know it's not always easy, but I'm rather investing into like building a showroom and having like one or two people there who are actually, like we do, a video call. If you have a question, you're willing to whatever, spend $1,000 for a snowboard setup. I think you deserve a real person who actually gives you some insight. And it's like, you shouldn't buy this one. Your feet is too big. You should probably go for the wide model. And now, you know, and talking about it with knowledge and not like an AI that maybe gives you the right hint or something, but it's not, I think it's not there yet, especially not in snowboarding. You could probably program it, but the money I put into this, I rather wait 2 or 3 or 4 years until it's ready and invest it now in human resources to actually know what they're talking about.
No, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the tool has to be high level. I think, you know, many of the chatbots today are not always high level, but at the same time, like I see kind of like the double side equation where you have like Amazon who has like a chatbot, that is like a barrier to entry, right? So if it's like basic questions, it can answer, but then, you know, eventually you can say, okay, let me talk to a human, you know, so depending on like, you know, what they're asking, if it's more like FAQ or if 100%. It's, you know, so it's definitely still a cost and time saving, I think, for lots of companies.
Yeah. No, 100%. If like we would sell direct and if a customer would ask, like, can you send me the tracking of my whatever like package? That's an easy one for AI to like just go into the database, send out the pack, like the tracking number. But like I said, if you don't know what kind of product you're between 3 or 4 boards, you know, you don't know exactly which one is the right one for you. I think it's right now still better to, if I can make it happen, that somebody, a real person, talks to you. And then I think you feel more comfortable spending the money with a brand who actually gives you the feeling we really care and not just, oh, it's like, you know, machine learning. And it probably is the right answer, but I'm not sure.
It's like, what's the flow now? Does somebody call or do you have like a chat with a live person on like on a website?
No, we have an online tool where you can ask any kind of question. Like, of course, you can filter down. Is it a warranty case? Is it like product information you're interested about? And then it's a classical like ticketing system. So depending on where you're from, the country will receive the message. So we see, okay, what's the response time? You know, you ask us a question and then maybe 2 hours or 3 hours later, you get your answer from the country that is relevant for you. So if you're in Argentina, somebody from Argentina will let you know how we can help you. And that's how it's set up right now. So it actually is working pretty well. Can it be optimized 100%? Would it be the right time for us to use AI right now? I don't think so. I think we have to keep an eye open, and for sure it will be relevant at some point.
Right.
But we're not there yet.
No, for sure. No, yeah, that's interesting. So what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you joined this company?
I honestly, that's hard for me to answer because when I joined the company, like I have to answer differently. So I studied, snowboarding was my life for like 10 years from like, let's say 15 to 25. In the same time, I finished my high school, I finished my university. After university, I knew, okay, snowboarding will be a hobby. I'm going to go out there and work somewhere globally. You know, so I went to Mexico, worked for a five-star hotel, market the five-star hotel in Europe. I went to Dubai, worked for management consultancy, helping German-speaking, you know, companies to get started in Dubai. I worked in a little tech company in California to gain some experience there. And at some point, I never planned that. I was invited for a job interview for Nitro Snowboards. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. I mean, I love snowboarding. And then I started. I had no idea. And I really liked the people who founded the company. They're pretty down-to-earth people and have a really good mindset. I really loved that. And then I just started. And they gave me all the freedom and said, okay, we just go for it. You know, whatever you think. The only thing in the beginning, I remember when they sent me, or like when I said I have to go to France to check out, you know, the distribution over there to get to know them better. Then they don't ask like why you do it they just say, okay, bring some wine and cheese when you come back. It's like it was full on trust from the very first moment. So it's not that I had this learning. I just like loved working for this company, and I still do now. Every morning when I wake up, I'm excited to see, oh, what's happening today. And I was really lucky, honestly. It was not a learning. It's like, oh, I wish I would have known that before I started, you know. And it's right. The other way around. It's wow, I never expected it to be, you know, when your private life and your work life becomes one and you're just full of passion and just love what you do. I think that's
amazing.
I'm fortunate and lucky to, you know, to be able to say that.
No, yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's not, like as you said, right, like many people don't have like the luxury of, you know, their passion becoming also their work. And I think, like, you know, when you're passionate, when you love it that much, like, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. 100%. And it, you know, of course, it depends on the people, you know, that you work together with. And then, of course, it's fun. And I'm more excited to sell a snowboard than a health insurance. You know, it's like topic itself. Like, we're always outside. We meet amazing people around the world. And they're all pretty like-minded. It doesn't matter if you're in Japan or in America or in Korea or in China. It's all the same, like, good-minded people, I feel, that love snowboarding. And that I don't know, yeah, that creates a lot of excitement about the everyday job, you know. You always, and you make dreams happen, you know. You support riders, they want to travel, they want to get better in snowboarding. You do it on all levels, and it's always good. It's kind of like, feels like you give back, you know, which is a nice thing, you know. And then, like I said, not having a structure that puts you under pressure that you have to grow, and like, that's the other beauty, you know. And now when we all talk about like sustainability, you know, it's a huge topic, this huge battle of labels, like who is climate neutral, who does this, you know, all the labels, and nobody talks about the company structure. You know, that's probably the healthiest. We produce whatever gets ordered from us. Everybody who sells direct to consumer, they have to guess what they think the consumers might want to buy from them. So they usually overstock. So it doesn't matter if you have the most sustainable jacket, but if you produce 50,000 too much, it doesn't make you a sustainable company. You know, it's like, it's a bigger, that's a bigger topic probably.
For sure. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out, do you mind sharing the company website or social media, or just even best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah. I mean, the best way in contact would probably be, of course, through my email. But the company website is nitrosnowboards.com, and Instagram, it's @nitrosnowboards. And the best way is probably through Instagram, to be honest.
Awesome. I want to say thank you so much for your time today. And we're rooting for you guys to have a big 2024.
Thank you very much. It was nice talking to you.
Likewise.
Have a good one.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye. All right, bye.